Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Today, we travel to the GameStop Expo to try out PSVR and live tell a tale. Then, Valerie and Devin try their hands at some Dungeons and Dragons. All that and more on this week's episode of Trust Circle. Hello, all. We are back. Episode 3. Our Triforce is complete. We can just call it quits after this one.
Do you want to do that?
Yeah, we're done. This is our final episode. It's been a good run. We'll see you in the next universe.
That's so really too bad. I know I was Debbie Downer last week, but I'm finally starting to come around.
All right, fine. We'll keep it going. All right, welcome to Trust Circle.
You can call it whatever you want. You are.
I can't call it anything. Welcome. We're going to search for it.
welcome to Safe Word.
Welcome to Talk Zone. Welcome to Trust Circle, episode 3. You made it. Top Shelf Gaming's...
Good gravy.
We'll get there eventually. TopShelfGaming.net. That's our site. This is our podcast, Trust Circle. I am your host, Devin Valdivia, and I am joined once again by my wife...
Marcus Garrett,
and Top Shelf Gaming's founder, owner, co-host, and crazy person, Valerie... No, see? We're already confusing him right off the bat.
I'm a black man.
No, my wife, Valerie, you're still going to be rest dad for now. Until it's legal, until you have a new Social Security card? Is that
the judge? This has been a running joke for 3 episodes, and maybe one day it won't be.
How does marriage work?
Don't ask us.
It's actually really easy. All you have to do is get a form from the courthouse, and then you get married, and you have some people sign it, and then you turn it back into them.
Yeah.
So where are you in this process? Because it sounds like it's...
We turned in our form.
Okay.
We should have our certificate. What were they going to do? Were they going to mail it to us,
or
do
we
go pick it up?
No, I think we had to go pick it up from Vincent Nguyen or whatever.
Okay, we're really good at this, guys. We're so good at it.
I'm looking at your hand right now, and it just, in marker... You wrote markers on it.
Yeah, see, that's the whole thing about being an artist, is you always need the supplies you don't have.
Yeah. But Marcus, here's where it gets crazy.
Yeah.
How did she write that?
Without markers?
No.
Oh, wait a minute.
She wrote it with her non-hand.
Oh my gosh.
And this is why I feel like I can never draw anything of any quality around her, because if she can write that with her not a hand...
So, to catch people up, Valerie actually only has one hand.
What? What?
Are you sitting down, Valerie?
Yeah. Awesome.
We haven't told her
Where'd
yet.
Where'd go?
I probably should have been more sensitive. Oh, I should have...
Trigger warning.
I should have pressured... I should have prefaced it.
A lot in the show notes will remind you before.
Yeah.
So, for her to write very... Actually, she has better handwriting than I have, and she didn't...
You have better stump writing than I have handwriting.
Yeah.
That's weird. I'm Devin, my wife Valerie, and the actual founder, frontman, crazy man of Top Shelf Gaming himself, Marcus Garrett.
Let's do this.
Let's do this thing. All right, well, this episode, a little different. We have some secret weekly activities we're going to talk to. See?
talk
I spelled it so you guys couldn't. So we're going to go over our weeks real quick without mentioning those two things. And then we'll get to those two things. So Valerie, why don't you start us off? How was your last week?
It was good. I was like 125% more social than I normally am. So I was excited.
You did a lot of social things.
We saw Mike Mignola, best known for creating the character Hellboy, give a talk at our alma mater, Chapman, and it was really cool. He showed us all his slides of his cool art, and I got a peek into his sketchbook, and see. I don't know. It was just neat. It was neat.
And then he
talked about how, basically, that lack of confidence never goes away, which is both reassuring and disheartening. But
that constant sense of dread you feel, it's there. It's there for real. It's just
even after you've made it.
And you're always like, basically, from here until eternity, you'll be like, that's probably the best thing I made. I probably won't make anything better. I should just stop trying.
Yeah.
Fun fact. He didn't even start Hellboy and get going with it until his mid-30s. Oh. So all you just graduated 20-something millennials feeling like you're never going to be anybody, you might not be for the next 10 years, but then you might. So there's still hope. Don't give up. Go be a 20-something-year-old like all of us here. And just get used to that dread because it's going to stick around.
That's really encouraging. And I mean that both sincerely and sarcastically.
Yeah, no, it was really cool getting an inside look into the life of an artist of that kind. You know, Mike Mignola, Hellboy, you know, it's not an unknown entity. You know, it was kind of a surprise that we just kind of randomly went to go see him. And he's just a normal dude. Like, he looks like a guy you'd see on the street, and you might assume, like, he hit hard times. Like, he's a very casual dressed artist.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way he just talked about, like, his work and his history, he'd just be throwing out these names, you know. Mm-hmm. He was like, oh, yeah, so then I just went back to work at Marvel and just, you know, I guess I'd do this whole comic for a while.
Well, he mostly talked about how, I mean, from a young age, he thought his, you know, dream of dreams was to work at Marvel, but then he did that early on, and then he discovered that, like, would rather, you know, make his own stories and his own characters and stuff.
Yeah. And then we got to see not only his personal sketchbook, he just took it out and, you know, just held out in front of us. I think you were holding it at one point.
Yeah.
Then he brings out, like, his original, like, watercolor paintings he's been working on.
Whoa.
And he's like, hey, check these out.
He like, motioned to me to hold it, and I was like, I can touch. I can touch thing.
Did you feel like some of his greatness was, like, rubbing off on you?
One only hopes.
One
only hopes.
Okay.
Yeah, but that was fun. You got a new season of television to watch.
Yeah, I enjoyed some season 3 of Penny Dreadful on Netflix last night with some Blood of Jesus, some wine. It's nice. It's good times.
Blood of Jesus. What you drinking? You know, I'm just sipping on some Blood of Jesus.
Sweet, sweet.
It redeems us all. It makes us feel nice inside.
Mm-hmm.
Initial impressions of season 3? We watched 2 episodes. I made it through 2.
That was all the Devin Good stomach.
How dreadful.
I mean, yeah. I'm in it, so. You know. I got what I came for.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the rest of the season. I got my elaborate starchy costumes. I got my grimy streets. I got my... you know, my richly textured dialogue and my Victorian horror tropes,
so
checked my boxes.
So you're good.
I'm good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this season, this isn't much of a spoiler, because it happens, like, immediately. They end up going to America.
Okay.
And, like, what, it's, like, 1892, I think, is the year. And so they're in America, and there's, like, cowboy. But it's basically
They go to Red Dead Redemption Land.
Yeah. Oh. They basically go to Red Dead Redemption. They're, like... You know, they bring in the cowboy that was living in London, that are bringing him back home. Like, mm-hmm. like basically just bringing in John Marston. So that's kind of keeping me going a little. Also, I just realized the main guy is Josh Hartnett, which sort of changes, like, my whole perception of the show for some reason.
I was like, Devin, they literally had that name in the credits in every episode.
Who is that?
Okay, so I only really remember him because my sister had a crush on him. When, do you remember Pearl Harbor? It was him and Ben Affleck. You guys were very little. I was
okay,
little when it came
so
out.
Okay, so were you.
You guys. You little babies.
You tiny babies. I have, like, 2 years on you. But, like, that's what I remember of Josh Hartnett and my sister having a crush on him. So, like, I have these weird emotions tied to that name. So I'm like, oh, okay, this is different.
Hmm.
What was your first celebrity crush?
My first, what's her name? Pink Power Ranger. I forget her name.
Kimmy?
No, Kimmy. No, Kimmy. Well, Kim, in fiction, it was Kimberly.
Kimberly.
But the actress, I forget her name. I feel bad about that, but she would have been the first.
IMDb that nonsense.
You what?
IMDb that nonsense.
Oh, I guess I could.
You could.
We have technology.
We have technology.
We have the power.
Did you do anything else this week besides the secret thing?
I mean, those are my major highlights. Marcus, what was your first celebrity crush?
My first celebrity crush, I think it was
Amy Jo Johnson. Sorry.
Amy Jo Johnson.
There it is.
Okay.
Sorry, I am sorry, Amy. Still number
wow.
one.
I remember. I think it was a cartoon.
not surprised.
I think it was. I don't remember like the order. I used to have a crush on Buttercup from Powerpuff Girls.
There you go.
Because she was the tough one. I was like, wow.
She was the Slytherin of the
She's
group.
Like, yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, and I'm.
Yeah.
Quick,
hey, Slytherin.
You're a Slytherin.
Quick,
yeah.
House the Powerpuff Girls.
Well, it's kind
it's
of obvious.
Easy.
Bubbles is Hufflepuff and Blossom is Gryffindor.
Have you
slash
seen
Ravenclaw, maybe.
The new show?
I actually haven't.
So they just rebooted it. Mm-hmm. I saw one episode. What I was working out at work,
uh-huh.
and they have a TV, and I was the only one there.
Wait, like working out?
Yeah.
There's like a gym?
Yes.
At your work place of work, can we mention your place of work?
I don't know.
Like not?
Is that are
is
we
that
allowed
thing?
To do that?
Somewhere that's big enough to have a gym inside of it.
Yeah.
Marcus works at Burrito Gong.
Yeah.
That's what we'll
Burrito
call it.
Burrito
Gong Incorporated.
Yeah. So, I was working out, and I like to work out in the middle of the day because there's no one else there.
Mm-hmm.
When you should be working.
I put in my hours. but, so, no one else was there, so it was the first time that I had control over the TV.
Mm.
And I don't have cable. I mean,
yeah.
I do, but I don't really watch it.
Yeah.
So I was like, no one's here to like judge me if I turn on if I turn on cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And
indulge.
So I went
just
to
get your tunes on, yeah.
I went to Cartoon Network, and then the new episode of the reboot of Powerpuff Girls came on, and I'm watching it and trying to do these like really, you know, glyphs.
You're trying to lift, bro?
Yeah, I was you know, doing like things that you need to focus on, and that it would not be good to laugh
mm-hmm.
while
yeah.
you're doing it.
While holding heavy weights.
Yes. This show is really funny.
Maybe
watching the
it.
Intro right now,
yeah,
this is some stylish.
Kind of on point, yeah.
It's
Chemical X.
I really like this show. I was a really big fan of Powerpuff Girls.
The original one was really good.
Yeah, I think this has the same humor, and it's that, you know, it's kind of that classic balance of
mm-hmm.
really great for kids, but like has clever humor
and like good messages.
So
and stuff.
So what do they do to bring Powerpuff Girls into 2016?
They didn't really change much. It's like I feel like if you went back to that show now, it would still hold up.
We actually watched the episodes not too long ago at my parents' house,
mm-hmm.
gallery.
A few, one of the ones I think I just watched this on my own, but they try to join this League of Superheroes, but the League of Superheroes, it's like really misogynist, and it keeps thinking they're like not capable of anything because they're like little girls,
yeah.
but of course they end up needing help. But it's pretty funny because like even after the Powerpuff Girls like save the misogynist superheroes, like it's not like they change their ways. They're still just like no, you little girl. So then they just leave.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need this. We don't need to be validated by this.
This is a crazy intro. They're beating up a panda.
Dude, this intro is really cool. But, I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying is that I don't think they really did much to make it modern.
I did notice something. So you know that phone with a nose that would ring
oh, yeah,
when
yeah.
the mayor of Townsville needed help?
It
looks like that is now a touchscreen.
It was
okay.
an app, yeah.
So that's pretty
yeah.
good.
I watched her touch the nose.
She touched it with her fingerless paw hand.
So, I remember when, like, back in the day with the original Powerpuff Girls, there is this one episode where the mayor is playing a video game on an N64
mm-hmm.
on an N64 controller, and then he's playing Legend of Zelda,
mm-hmm.
and so I guess what would bring this into the modern world is just like a modern console. I don't know. Just I think it's like really just like the technology.
It's funny because, you know, I grew up mostly on Nickelodeon.
Mm-hmm.
We got Cartoon Network, you know, on our TV at some point when I was a kid, but by that time I'd already, you know, I was all about SpongeBob, Rugrats, Hey Arnold.
I was a Cartoon Network kid.
Yeah, you were for sure. And so, like, this show, Samurai Jack.
Samurai Jack was good.
Samurai Jack was Cartoon Network, yeah.
Yeah, those, I'd see those shows at friends' houses, and then, you know, I'd be like, oh, those shows look, like, really cool, because, like, they had, like, a very different feel to them than, like, Nickelodeon shows, and especially Disney shows.
Yeah.
And so I always have, like, a different, like, association with, like, Cartoon Network cartoons than just, like, the rest of 90s cartoons, because it seems, like, so, like, not, like, a different, like, tier, like, quality-wise, but just, like, it was the forbidden thing.
Content-wise, it was edgier.
It was, at the time,
it had Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Yeah. Oh, that show was weird.
It had, what's it have?
Johnny Lab. Bravo.
Johnny Bravo.
I always felt really strange watching the show. I don't think I got the humor. And I feel like I would get it way too much now. So they're bringing Samurai Jack back, apparently, too.
Yeah.
They are.
Yes.
Hopefully that's good, because that show had style.
Mm-hmm. It had so much style that it stylized itself into a short lifespan.
We shall see.
Had it come across now, now and there's cartoons that are very... very known for their specific style, like Steven Universe or things like that, it would have flourished, or like Adventure Time, whereas when it came around, what, in the early 2000s?
Everything was super homogenous.
Super homogenous. The cartoon, like, viewing market was not as primed as it is nowadays, whereas all of us, the millennials who were age 11 in the early 2000s,
now the ones making them.
Yeah, now are the ones making them and consuming them and appreciating them.
Make it crazy again.
Bring Jack back. Bring Jack back.
He's coming back. Bring
Jack.
The chant.
We did it.
Yeah. Hashtag change.
Hashtag change.
Jack, Samurai Jack.
So other than watching Powerpuff Girls and the other secret thing we'll get to later, any other highlights from your week?
Well, I've been spending a lot of time at our school. I've been Friday, Saturday, I was at Chapman and just hanging out with some old friends there. Just really quickly, it's just nice because I've been living in LA for the past year and just kind of separated from all of my friends, and it's cool to be back on campus and specifically spending time with my old residence life friends from when I was an RA, and seeing kind of the generations of people, and seeing the new RAs and seeing the people that I still don't know. It's just kind of cool being back in that environment, and I really want to stay connected with Chapman. Mm-hmm. You know, like I really want to stay invested, and I really want to kind of...
Chapman wants you to be invested too.
Ka-ching! Oh, yeah, sure do.
Ka-ching!
Yeah. It's like I'm not gonna donate, but like I want to be involved, and you know, that's kind of why I'm doing this internship. It gives me a way to stay involved with the Chapman community and still kind of give back in my own way, which is not monetary, and it's not going to be as long as I still have 20 years of loans that I'm trying to like pay off. But
as the kids would say, RT.
I don't get that.
It's like same, but now it's a retweet.
Oh.
I heard that on a thing.
Devin listened to a podcast.
I listened to
now
a podcast.
Now he thinks he's super hip.
RT.
Do people say that out loud?
That's,
they actually say RT?
On a podcast I listened to just
high
2 days ago.
High schoolers
say it.
They've gone from same to RT.
I was a fan of Ditto.
Blame Riley Small for that.
I like Ditto. RT?
I had a first edition holographic Ditto.
Yeah, really?
I did.
Oh,
I got stolen with my Charizard.
Oh.
Nerds!
I had like 3 Charizards.
Nice.
And I was like the talk of the town.
I got 2. Well, you know, so go to Chapman. It's interesting that you say that because Valerie and I, when we were there listening to Mike Mignola speak, we kind of had the same experience, but via the professors, or at least for me. So you're recently graduated enough where you should actually know some of the students.
Yeah.
I am now 4 years out. So nobody that was there when I was there, like, it's a full sweep.
Yeah.
So I go there and I just see strange faces. And they all look really young for some reason. Like I don't feel that much older, but like
when you see
being there and seeing them and being like, oh, young. Like you're a little, super you're a baby.
That means we look old.
Yeah,
we look old and bedraggled.
People don't ask me to see my ID anymore, and like it kind of bums me out.
Yeah, well, I can buy wine, no problem.
Yeah, it's the beard.
But going back and seeing we've talked about our professor, our design professor before on the podcast, I believe, might have been one of the unaired episodes.
Mm-hmm.
We had, you know, kind of a special relationship with him, but even the other professors we had.
Meaning he was our mentor.
Okay, thank you for whatever, okay. But just seeing, you know, some of the other professors there and just kind of instantly reconnecting with them, you know, we saw a professor that I hadn't had a class with since my freshman year, but just walked right up to him. He remembered me. I remember, you know, we just, like no time had passed.
Wow.
And so, you know, if that's the kind of education you're looking for, head on down to Chapman and apply today.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably common to all, you know, college experiences, but, you know, when I think back to college, you know, I am working in a job of my major choice, whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't really value my quote-unquote education there as much as I value, like, the relationships that I built there. You know, I met my wife at Chapman. I met you at Chapman. I met, you know, most of my best friends now at Chapman. I have mentors for life that I, you know, that I met all through Chapman and just that period of my life. So, you know, while college as an idea is kind of changing, I think, for a lot of people, and you know, for financial reasons alone, like, it should be changing, but there's real value on top of and aside from just you need an education.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's interesting that, you know, and you're still seeing those relationships there, and even you with Top Shelf Gaming really choosing to continue to invest in your passions via Chapman and bringing in Chapman into that whole adventure, and, you know, I guess exclusively for now, for the time being anyways.
Yeah.
I think that, if nothing else, says a lot about the quality of the types of relationships you can form during this time of your life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, anything else, or I'll go over my week was pretty boring other than the two secret things.
No.
All right. I bought Grand Theft Auto 5 on Friday. It was half off at Best Buy. The sale's over now, so when you're hearing this, you missed it.
I have a fun fact about Grand Theft Auto.
Yes, you do. So she mentioned this earlier. I'm waiting all day to hear this fun fact.
Let me tell
you.
Okay.
I hope it's fun.
Okay. So I learned on Wait, Don't Tell Me that. So you know how the AI software being used for self-driving cars, like, it's still in development.
Yeah.
So they need basically to like give it like a lot of trials in order to perfect the software. So one of the ways of doing that is having the AI software play through Grand Theft Auto.
What? That's cool.
That's pretty cool.
That's really cool.
That's pretty cool. But yeah, I bought it again. I bought it day one, 360 when it came out. Played the heck out of it, you know. But through so they added content to the game over time, and they added more cars and things, and over time, they kind of broke the game on 360 and PS3 because it just taxed the systems too much. And so you just, it would do weird memory things.
Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't be able to keep up with all the information it's trying to, it kind of became a mess. Having it on PS4, it is much prettier. You really forget, I want to do an episode sometime in the future just talking about open world games in detail and how open world games are built. Because
what does open world mean?
Oh, yes, we'll do your world of the week in just a minute. Open world means, instead of, think of a game like Mario, where it's like level one, you go through and beat it. Level two, open world, there isn't like discrete separate levels. It's just one big open play area that you go to different locations in the same space to play throughout the game. Open world.
I see.
Easy. It's a beautifully detailed game. Aside from the story and everything else, which we're talking about now, just... It's being from Southern California and having this fictional creation, like, it's really, really cool. Watch Dogs 2 is coming out soon. That might be a good time to talk about something like this.
Yeah.
We'll bookmark that.
Yeah.
Before we move on to our two main topics, though, let's Word of the Week you, Valerie. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with Word of the Week, Valerie, you are ever so slightly less invested in games than Marcus and I.
Just a skosh.
Just a skosh. So every week we choose a word that you can call out and encourage you to call at any point in time, even if it's in the middle of one of our sentences. Just call it out and we will stop and explain anything you may need defined for you, clarified for you, or if you just have something to say about it and we're just in our own little zone. So what should your word of the week be?
How about... let's go Hellboy.
Hellboy.
Hey. Anytime you need to say something or need us to do whatever, word of the week, Hellboy. So now our two main topics of the show. We're going to start with mine and Marcus's. So Marcus, on Wednesday, what did we do?
We went to Anaheim Convention Center to attend the GameStop Expo. Valerie is not an expert at all.
You should have had the Boozela app ready to go for that part, really.
She gave us this look like, why do I even talk to you?
They probably felt it through the air.
Was it withering? I was going for withering.
Yeah, that's definitely... like, I felt my spirit wither, and I was okay. Like, I never want to do this ever again.
We went to GameStop Expo.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of myself for not saying GameSpot Expo.
GameSpot
Expo. But now I've already said it, so we're already out there.
Game Spoop a Poop.
Game Spoop Expo.
Yes.
Game Spoop Expo.
It's almost Halloween. So,
I'll pretend that Valerie just yelled at Hellboy.
Well, you haven't said any lead-in. I know what it was. It was at a convention center thing.
It's a thing.
It's a thing at a convention center.
You nailed it. We sent you pictures of
I'll
of
say
of a
Hellboy
model.
When I want to say
All right. I'll give you control.
You can't
over
tell
your
the wind to Hellboy.
Yeah.
See, Hellboy's whenever she wants a Hellboy.
Hellboy's going to Hellboy, and Hellboy wants a Hellboy.
So, it's GameStop Expo. The whole idea is that E3, which is a trade show for the video game and tech industries, everyone who works in that industry and all of the games media come together and they show off the like latest games, the latest technology for games or that are associated
electronic entertainment.
Yeah, it's called the Electronic Entertainment Expo, which is why we call it E3. But it's really just games. That's its core focus.
Yeah.
What GameStop Expo is, because E3 is not for the general public. So GameStop Expo like takes the games that were shown at E3 and provides a space where the common man
or woman
and or child thing. It's,
or humanoid.
It's mostly children.
Sometimes there are 28-year-old children.
Mostly man children.
but they're all children. And they can come and try out these games that aren't out yet that they're really excited for, but they wouldn't
in
have...
In some cases aren't out yet.
Yeah.
We'll get there. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead.
And so they... it's a really cool experience. When I first started Top Shelf Gaming, it was the first expo... the first convention I ever attended as...
was this in 2014 or 2015?
2014.
Okay.
Last year, it was in Las Vegas.
Ah.
So I did not go.
You did not go.
But the first year, it was also at Anaheim.
Okay.
And I think it's back and forth. It just...
okay, so...
it alternates.
So I think the best way to start this would... briefly describe your experience in 2014.
It was incredible. I had so much fun. So, journalistically...
mm-hmm.
I did not do my job. That was my first event. Like, I didn't know how to...
you had one job!
...cover events, but I was just overwhelmed with how mm-hmm. much there was to do, and that was also the year Smash Brothers came out. And so, I found the Smash Brothers booth, one of the first people to ever play it, and I just stayed there all day. And I played Smash Brothers for, like, 4 or 5 hours, and... it wasn't very, like, I failed as a journalist, but I also had fun. But in addition to Smash Brothers, there were tons of other games as a part of press, and if you buy a VIP package, you are able to go in 90 minutes early. Mm-hmm. And so I did that, and I wasted that time playing Smash Brothers when, as soon as everyone else came in, like, there
just
was
flooded the place.
Just, like, flooded.
You know, they say, these lines. Time you enjoyed wasting wasn't wasted.
That's true. So, I mean, I don't regret any of it, but there were so many booths. There were just so many games. There were a lot of guest speakers. I met the original Power Rangers there, so I think nice.
You met Amy Jo.
I met your crush, yeah.
Wow. Amy Jo Johnson.
And I met Nolan North, who is a voice actor. Well, now he's known for his voice acting. He's mm-hmm. he's like in almost every video game.
There were a few years there where literally
just
like
everything was just Nolan North.
70% of like major releases, Nolan North was probably his.
Yeah,
somehow involved.
Him and Troy Baker.
Troy Baker.
It's like those are the like two main video game voices, and
deservedly so. They're amazing.
Hellboy. Yeah. Would I know any of the characters that they voiced?
Nathan Drake
from Uncharted.
And okay. His brother is Troy Baker.
Yeah.
So there you go.
But needless to say, it was just a wonderful day. I remember taking the bus there. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a car at the time. I took it from Chapman to Anaheim Convention Center. It was quite the journey because I think I missed my first bus, and then it was just like really stressful. And then trying to get home when I had all this like free stuff and these like swag bags and mm-hmm. just like trying in like a big bag that said Xbox One. And
trying
like,
not to look muggable.
Yeah. It's like, But, I mean, I made it home and everything was fine, but it was just such a fantastic day.
Yeah. So, Wednesday.
Yes.
You picked me up bright and early. We made it down there. Pretty easy traffic. Pretty easy parking. I mean, we were there early again through press VIP access. We got to go 90 minutes early. We get there, and, you know, there's a long line, mm-hmm. but, you know, we go and we wait, and we take pictures with a giant Tracer statue that was awesome.
Hello, love.
We go get our stuff, we get our bags, you realize that there are, in fact, two different Zelda posters
yes.
available, which you did eventually track down the second one.
Mm-hmm.
I doubted you, and I should not have.
Yeah, you doubted me so hard, and so we got a free poster as a part of our press bag, mm-hmm. but then for the general admission, they had their own poster that was also Zelda.
And when Zelda's involved,
Zelda
as Ain't No Mountain
favorite
High.
Frown
as, Ain't No Valley Low.
As my favorite series, I was like, I need that second poster.
You're going to be on it like jelly on toast.
At that point in time, the whole day became revolved around getting this poster. And Devin was like, you're not going to get it. Well, I got it.
You know, so
Doubting Thomas over here.
One yeah. could say...
Doubting Devin.
One could say my negative reinforcement helped give you the courage to accomplish your goal. One could say that.
I don't know if that's how negative reinforcement works.
If one said that, yeah. they would be wrong.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so we get there, and so we get in. You know, there's some press there. There's a lot of consumers. You can tell, you know, they're very excited.
Yeah.
We get in there, and my goal, for the day was try PSVR, PlayStation VR. I haven't done virtual reality anything yet, and I knew it was going to be there. And, you know, my one goal was try it out. I've been a skeptic, so this is my chance to really put my thoughts and assumptions to the test. So we head over there really quick. And we get in line for VR, and this is where our first and one of the most memorable experiences of the day take place. We're waiting in line, and we're behind these two guys. They're probably around our same age, maybe a year or two younger.
Yeah.
Maybe around your age, I guess. Baby.
A little bit.
Oh, you young children. And this one guy, the guy in front of us, he's so excited. He cannot contain how excited he just to be there. He's just, you know, he's they have like six to eight different games like you can try on VR. So you're waiting in line, you get sent to one of them. And he's just like looking because you can see screens of people who are playing them. So he's watching them all, and he's like, "Oh, this is the coolest thing!" Like, "Oh," and his excitement is palpable.
It's visceral.
And so we kind of talked to them a little bit, and you know they're looking at the Until Dawn game, which is like a spooky game. They're like, "Oh, I don't want that game. I'll be too scared." And his friend actually ended up getting the spooky game, but we eventually make it through the line, and I don't get a spooky game, I get like a robot game. My first impression of PSVR, the headset seems very nice. Mm-hmm. It's very well made. You can put it on, and it's pretty comfortable. The game I played did nothing to wow me. It just kind of felt like I was playing like a weird arcade game, with just like the screen. I was playing a screen that was just close to my face. I was playing with a controller, not anything special, like just a regular PlayStation 4 controller. I was in a tank walking around, like in space. The controls felt kind of clunky. I could look around using the headset, but it really didn't do anything to give me any reason to want this technology. The game itself was okay, but had it not been for the headset and like the immersion of it, I wouldn't want to play it. It was kind of a boring game. You played a similar-ish game. You played Battlezone.
Yeah.
And kind of had, you know, was your about the same experience?
Yeah. I feel like I didn't see what your game looked like,
mm-hmm.
but what you're describing, it sounds like we could just have swapped them out. It's
from what I saw of you playing, it seemed very similar. Which it was two different games, and they both looked, to me at least, very similar, which is kind of telling in its own. And really it comes down to, you know, if this had been an actual game, like just any other game, like I wouldn't want to play it. Yeah. And that's not what I'm looking for in VR. For me specifically, I wanted to really test like the virtual reality helmet, like 3D immersion-ness mm-hmm. of it. My eyes are terrible, so much so that I can't drive. And so I want to put my eyes to the test with VR.
Yeah.
And in this first case, like, it just felt like I was looking at a big close-up screen. I was afraid I wasn't going to see it at all. I was afraid it was going to be, you know, out of focus or something. So I was happy that I could still actually see it and play it, but it did nothing.
Yeah.
Then, later on, we went and played Farpoint, which was a separate VR game, night and day. This was a very different experience. So in Farpoint, it's a shooter. You're on an alien planet shooting. It's all very conceptual. And the controller, it's PlayStation Move controllers, which just they're controllers with little lights on the end. And
PlayStation Move controllers?
Move.
Move. Like for cows?
They're not cows.
Yes.
Like it's like
cows.
A cow?
Cattle.
A cow controller. Yeah.
You've played Wii before, right? Think of the little Wii, the little square Wii controllers?
Yes.
Put like a ball, like a LED ball on top of that? That's a controller.
Think of a glowing clown nose.
There you go. On a stick.
At the end of it.
So now like place Delightful. Those two sticks into like a gun, like PVC pipe sort of thing. That's kind of, so you're basically holding a gun, essentially. And it's got a trigger and stuff. So much better.
Yeah.
I think having the controller be, you know, placing your hands in the same position you're playing in the game, I think I was just wearing the headset better this time around. I actually felt immersed in this game. I moved, the moment that really hit it for me, I looked down, I saw my hands, and then I moved my hands and just watched my character, who was me, just kind of move it exactly in sync with, you know, twisting the gun around, mm-hmm. and like it just felt like it just worked. And like it's this weird like separation, like those are my hands, but they're not my hands, but they are my hands. It just clicked. The game itself, you know, you're shooting aliens, very simple, but like it was very effective in proving what VR could be capable of. Graphics wise, it looked, you know, maybe like a nice 360 game. Didn't look bad, didn't look, you know, amazing, but it didn't look bad. I got the sense of scale. I felt like I was walking over things, under things. There was a very large monster at the very end. You know, I walked right under it, and you know, it seemed like a big, huge, giant monster. It felt natural. So my verdict on VR so far is it can work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still nervous that it may end up being a lot of the time like my first experience. But knowing that good experiences can be possible makes me excited.
Is that enough? Because when we think about the Wii, like, or even motion controls in general, like the Wii kind of revolutionized, but it only revolutionized kind of that era. Mm-hmm. You know, it, like, motion controls have not persisted really in as overt a way. Like, VR is bringing it back, kind of, but it's only relevant again because it's VR.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea, like, getting to use motion controls in the way that you just described is in supporting VR.
Yeah.
The actual motion controls aren't the main mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like not the main function. So, in your opinion, do you feel like just having that potential at this point is enough to kind of buy into it?
I don't think I'm ready to buy, like, you know, I'm not going to shell out my $400,
mm-hmm.
you know, or my, you know, 1,000 and be to really get a PC and Oculus set up.
Good.
Yeah.
We don't have that kind of money.
Good news, Valerie. So, like, I'm not fully bought in to the point where I'm going to literally buy in.
Mm-hmm.
But I am in a far more optimistic place than I was a week ago. And even, you know, so after playing the first game, I was, you know, like, all my fears confirmed, like, this is useless, this is a waste of time, it's gonna just hold, like, real video games back, you know, however many years we waste, you know, trying to make this work and then realizing that it doesn't. After playing Farpoint, I think it is worth people's investment. I think it's worth the developer investment. I think it's worth people who can afford it to invest and really and see. It might still fail. It might not be enough for the average consumer. It might be outpriced. You know, Farpoint was fun. Not $400 fun for me.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
Like, not even close. But it's brand new technology. Like, I expect it to be kind of outpriced right now. So I think it's, for those who can invest, I would encourage them to. I would encourage developers to invest in it. I am now interested and hopeful to see what comes of it. But it didn't quite push me over the edge where I was like, this is the future of gaming. I need to get on board. I think I'll be just fine with my plain old PS4 and my DualShock 4 controller. But I'm happy to know that it's out there.
Yeah.
And maybe one day I will jump on board.
Okay, cool.
Valerie, really quickly, what is your perception of VR, just in general?
Little to none, because I have no interest in it. Therefore, I have not sought out any information on it.
That might be telling it itself. So outside of VR, Marcus, we spent a lot of time talking about that, about GameStop Expo, because, well, what else is there to talk about GameStop Expo?
Oh, not a whole lot, Devin. Valerie, it was so sad.
I'm sorry, Marcus.
Like, it was so sad.
What made it sad?
There was nothing to play.
Wasn't that a point of a GameStop, that there's games and you're stopping there to play them?
That is, it is the point.
Seems like the point.
Power to the players.
Yeah. Power to the players. There was nothing to play. So there were so many like game developers listed on
mm-hmm.
the program.
Mm-hmm.
You get there, there's a lot of booths, but not a lot of demo stations, not a lot of things that people could actually walk up to.
What were you supposed to do, like, play at these, like, various booths?
You just
kind of
watch
games.
They had screens and they had trailers.
Yeah, there were a lot of videos. There were a lot of, like, small, like, displays.
Yeah.
You know, I saw a lot of figurines. You know, we took a picture of Pikachu, like, walking. You know, we hunted Pikachu down.
Yeah.
There's a giant cute Pikachu statue. There were some toys and stuff. We got roped into playing Rainbow Six Siege, which would be great if the game hadn't come out 6 months ago.
So one of the only games that we played is a game that's been out.
It's been out, yeah.
Yeah.
Why was this one, like, more disappointing than the one 2 years ago? And one assumes the one in Vegas, because, I mean, like, it's...
I maybe it was in don't Vegas. Know what happened.
It's not like video games are going out of style.
No.
No, if anything, video games are more they're popular now than they've ever been. Like, video games are an amazing place right now. You know, and at first, you know, as we realized this was not what we expected, we kind of talked about it. And at first, I thought, well, like, you know, it's not a good event for press. Like, E3 just happened. Like, you know, and E3 itself was kind of fading away because, you know, it's cheaper for developers to just put out their trailers and announcements online on YouTube. But then you pointed out that this wasn't really for press so much. It was for the average. It was for the guy we saw online who was just stoked to be there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we tried to track them down so we could actually, you know, talk to them and perhaps interview them.
Yeah.
We never found them again. We fleetingly saw them.
I gave one guy.
Oh, you did find one.
Yeah, up? But okay. We never connected.
I just never really got there.
We left early.
Yeah.
Like, I went back to work.
Yeah, you finished. You went.
Marcus did a half day.
We got so bored that I literally went back to work. I would rather have been at work than at this.
Watching Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah.
In the workout room.
Yeah. Like, we played Forza Horizon 3, which is a game that's not released yet. And, you know, it's a game, I don't have an Xbox, but it's one of the reasons why I kind of want an Xbox. I love the Forza Horizon series.
Yeah.
It's great. And I like playing the demo, but it was like a 6-minute demo. It was,
what kind of game is that?
It's a racing game, open world. Okay. Open world. See, there we go.
Wait, what was the words were you saying?
It's a racing game. Forza. It's Italian. Forza Horizon. It's a racing
game. Spaghetti.
Italian.
Bucatini.
Ladies and spaghetti.
Oh, no. He fit it in there. He snuck it in. Oh, I tell you to edit it out, but I know you won't.
I won't.
You'll edit it in more.
You know, we were in line to play For Honor, which is a, like, a combat, like, knight versus samurai versus ninja kind of game. It's interesting. It's not out yet. But we got more bored waiting in line than, like, Our boredom of being in line outweighed our anticipation of playing the game. And we just like, let's just go do something else.
Literally, that happened multiple times.
Yeah, multiple times. We were like, should we do this? Yeah, we could, but we could just not.
The Disneyland effect.
Well, it's the opposite. Like, when like, you go to Disneyland, you're waiting in line to ride, to, like, sit down in this moving car.
So then, instead of, like, I was thinking Disneyland effect in terms of, like, you know, you wait in line so long that it's, like, diminishing returns. But you're saying, like, Disneyland, you know, you have a goal. You're like, I want to ride Pirates of the Caribbean, therefore.
And, like,
get there. I will wait.
But, like, even if you're waiting for, like, 2 hours, people do it because it's worth it.
Yeah.
Like, none of these games felt really worth it.
And then, you know, we realized the alpha for Honor was coming out, the next day.
What? The alpha for good? What?
You have a word for this.
Hellboy.
There you go. So you gotta use the word.
Yeah.
Otherwise we don't know.
I have actually received listener feedback saying that they wish that you would say your word.
Sorry, I forget about it. I'm sorry.
Hellboy.
Sorry. Okay.
So Alpha. This will take too long to fully describe. Think of it as like a test.
Like a free test. I forgot what we were talking about. What are you talking about?
Oh my goodness.
An alpha
for the game For Honor.
For Honor is the name of the game.
Yeah, For Honor.
Enunciate, my good sir. Great.
This is a Honor podcast. You gotta enunciate.
Yeah.
For Honor.
Alpha For Honor.
Alpha For Honor.
That's what I heard you say.
Okay. Well, so I need to go to speech classes. Yeah. Anyways.
Please.
Been there, done that.
Me too, actually.
Oh, really?
When I was 4, I couldn't say my R's.
Do you want to know what alpha is? Not.
That's what I guessed.
I could. My name was Valerie.
For some reason, I was like, if Valerie went to speech class, I bet it was for R's.
It was for R's.
I don't know why.
It was tricky R's, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, Alpha Frauner.
And alpha, like Devin was saying, so a game is made iteratively. You have...
Hellboy.
Iteratively? You know what the word iteratively means.
I didn't know if that was like a lingo word.
So basically...
Like a sweet, sweet jargon.
Well,
you know?
Well, you have your game.
Yeah.
You make what you kind of want your game to be, but it's not really ready yet.
Okay.
And like, so you like keep building and like keep making it better and then keep making it better.
Okay.
And you're kind of like building it in passes, and like each time it gets better and better until it's...
You're putting the toast back in the toaster for a little longer. Yeah. You're like, nope, I want a crispier.
Yeah,
nope,
so crispier. Like the alpha is like after you have decided, I want this game to have this, and then you build it, and it's like your first playable version.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the first real version where like everything is kind of in place. Like, maybe not everything's done yet, but, like, more or less, you have a game that you can play.
Okay.
And so what we played, so the For Honor demo, For Honor demo.
I'm telling ya, the rural juror, sticky word.
Name the game. Blame Ubisoft, they're all French.
And
For Honor.
For Honor. Yours is much better.
For Honor. Personne n'échappe à mon regard.
The complicated part comes in where... The words alpha, there's also a beta phase, and you can test that phase too. But in a lot of cases, and kind of this one too, Ubisoft is especially kind of quote unquote guilty of this. It's more of like a marketing term. You know, when you think of alpha, you'd probably think of a much rougher state than what this game actually presents itself as.
This game is basically
done. Yeah, it comes out in February, so like, you know, they still have work to do, but like, calling an alpha is a little generous. A lot of beta tests are essentially what we just call free demos now.
Yeah.
You know, they'll be releasing beta tests like a couple of weeks before a game comes out. Your game's on a beta at that point.
your game is way past beta.
So it's a more technical sounding marketing term. Looking at you, Call of Duty and Battlefield. But anyway, so that was coming out the day after the GameStop Expo. We actually didn't actually... I applied for access in June, apparently. I didn't, unbeknownst to me. We didn't actually get in, but, like, I'm not even, like, bumming about it.
No.
And, like, that was just... There were, you know... So, let's sum it up this way. At one point, Marcus just went off to play a round of Overwatch. Because he's like, oh, Overwatch is over there. Let's just go do that. And I was like, that sounds great. Let's take a break from all these, like, supposedly new things we can look at. And just go play some Overwatch and unwind.
You mean you wanted to... experience some tranquility
a little bit, and then we kind of got sold some turtle beach headphones.
What the hell boy is that?
A company that makes headphones
for turtles.
For turtles. Yeah. Yeah. They just have those little ear holes, you know. You gotta modify them a lot.
Yeah,
it's very sensitive. Cordless. It's now. Yeah, they're really keeping up with
my turtle ate them. His headphones.
He ate them.
You know, but
they were made of lettuce.
Yeah. We got early access. We got 9:30 access.
The
main doors open.
Apple headphones.
Yeah,
turtles
it was
love
made
apples.
From
so
Apple. Sorry.
I'm not done. No, I'm done. Okay, you can go.
She's out of jokes, so you can proceed.
So we got early access, but after 11 o'clock and, like, you know, the doors should open for the rest of the public, didn't really get any more crowded. Like, the lines fill up a little bit more, but that, like, it really just seemed like enough people came in to just sort of fill up the lines a bit more, not actually to make the space in any way feel packed. Like,
maybe they were paid extras.
Yeah.
It was just,
paid extras. Have you considered that?
It was just kind of open space, and it was like weirdly quiet, and so I really wanted to know, you know, and if you're listening to this and you went there and you're just kind of an average consumer of games, like, write us in and let us know what you think. I want to know what, you know, someone who paved their way in thought of that event. For me, and like my level of involvement in gaming, if I had spent money to go to that event, I'd be mad.
Yeah.
Like, I would be, like, I wouldn't just be disappointed. I would be upset. You know, not that, and, you know, I'm owed anything, but, like, what is presented, and, you know, and it just, it was a very weird disconnect, and it seemed very empty and strange. So I don't really know what that quite says about the industry, if this is just an event they didn't market well, if there's just not really a place for, even on the consumer end, an event like this, as opposed to just releasing things via YouTube or alpha and beta tests, and if, you know, people just aren't really interested in going to a whole convention where you're meant to play games, the developers didn't really seem to buy into it, because there weren't a ton of playable stuff.
It's said if you had put in money, like, you wouldn't feel like you got your money's worth. So let's put this into perspective. General admission was $40.
Okay.
VIP was $110.
Okay, and so VIP came with a 90-minute early access, along with a swag bag that included a poster, a Funko Pop figure of, I'm pretty sure they were all of just Evie Fry. I didn't see any other ones other than Evie. I got an R2-D2, like, can cooler cozy thing.
Socks.
Some Doctor Who socks.
Doctor Who socks.
Some PS4 controller grips.
Yeah. Most of the things in there weren't even gaming specific.
No, it was just like general, like, nerd stuff.
Yeah.
You're nerds. Hey, you all wear Doctor Who, right?
It was all, like, overstock.
And, like, you know, in a bag. And, like, that's all fine.
Yeah.
But, like, that's not $110 worth of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I appreciate the free stuff, but...
Well, not free stuff.
Yes.
You're very much paying for it.
$110.
Well, I think here's what makes up that price difference. You also got complimentary continental breakfast.
No, that's true.
So,
cha-ching.
Yeah.
I did hear someone talk about that it was very good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, there's that.
Yeah, I guess so. No, it's... When I compare this experience to my first experience, just, like, the first experience was greater than I could have imagined.
Yeah.
This was underwhelming in almost every way.
And that's the worrying part, because it's not like this is just our weird perception of, you know, like, it's not like we're just too invested in gaming, like, this is, like, an underwhelming event. You went to this before, and it was an impressive thing.
Yeah.
And so for you to come back to this event and have it be what it was, you know, I don't know. Do you think they notice or care? Like, you can't not notice.
That's what scares me, is that, like, is this just a bad year? Or is it gonna be like this?
Yeah.
Because even when I went before, they had tournaments. And so in that kind of, like, waiting room... There was this, like, VIP/press area, and then there was all of these TVs set up, and, like, people could play video games before the doors opened, and then that's where breakfast was, and then it was just this space for, like, people to just hang out, and then there was a press area too, and it was just, like, so nice. And then, like, this year
I was like, yeah, I'll just kind of go here. Even the line at the beginning, they made us all line up, like, it was this big, like, you know, organized-ish looking line, and then they just kind of opened doors and, like, I don't know, just go, like,
yeah,
not like file in line, just, like, they opened, like, doors on both ends and were like, it's open, just, like just walking. why are you guys waiting around the line, the doors are open, guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We just walked out of line and just walked in, because I don't know, I hope this isn't an indication of things to come, because, I mean, first of all, that's not okay to the consumers. Like, it's fine for us. We didn't pay for it.
Yeah, like, our complaining is a little...
Yeah. Like, when we look at that guy who, like, we met, who was just so excited to be there, like, this is for him.
Yeah.
You know, this is... Like, that event should
I wonder
be
how he felt at the end of the day.
He probably... I mean, he was so stoked. He probably just had the time of his life, but... I don't know. They could have done better.
Even if it still works for consumers, like, they can do... You know they can do better because they've done better.
Yeah.
So, and GameStop is still doing all right, you know, despite all the digital sales stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they're not at the tipping point just yet.
Not yet.
So, I don't know, maybe we'll see more, maybe we'll see some feedback from the Kind of Funny guys. They were there. Well, they probably won't actually, you know, if they were there working, they probably won't comment on it.
No.
I don't know. Well, I haven't heard anyone else talking about it at all. I don't know. Interesting event, though, and I got to play VR.
Yeah.
So, for me...
You did it.
There was great value in that. Everything else aside, whatever.
Was playing VR worth $40?
You know, if you put it that way, It might be.
Yeah.
So in that specific context, maybe.
But that's weird, though. Like, would I pay $40 for that whole convention? No.
But would I pay to...
to just play VR?
Yeah. Yeah, and like, as like, that sounds like an impossible thing, but like, that's kind of my stance. Like, I don't know how that makes sense in my head.
Well, that's all we did.
Yeah. Everything other than play VR was just like, I don't know. So yeah, that was interesting. I don't... maybe, yeah, if you're listening to this and you happen to be there, or have you gone to, you know, last year's in Vegas, or the one from 2014, write in and let us know your thoughts. Our second secret topic. Valerie, on Friday, you and I did something very new, and I would say very out of the norm for you. Even well, for me, too.
Sorta.
What did we do?
We played Dungeons & Dragons.
We played Dungeons & Dragons.
You guys played Dungeons & Dragons.
We super played Dungeons & Dragons.
Valerie rolled all kinds of D20s.
I need to know everything.
Okay.
Where, with who, why.
So, one of my coworkers, he had mentioned one day, we just got on the topic that we both listened to, McElroy podcasts, like my brother and me, and then the one that they started more recently, where called The Adventure Zone, where they play Dungeons and Dragons with their dad.
Yeah.
And then, so, basically because of interest in that podcast, and he mentioned that he also saw the characters play it on Stranger Things.
Stranger Things.
Of course, yeah. Yep, Stranger Things, and then
bringing it back.
He and some friends had started playing it, and that they were just kind of asking if I was interested, because, you know, it's like, I'm a fan of the podcast, too. So we went over to his house. His friend was DMing, or Dungeon Mastering.
Dungeon
Master. There you go.
Hellboy.
Dungeon Mastering.
Yeah, Hellboy.
Yeah, that's how it feels. And, yeah, we got there a little bit early, because we had to set up, like, our characters.
And build some characters.
Which is definitely...
Hellboy.
Okay, so I guess, like, I mean, I've played this all of 3 hours, so I'm by no means an authority on this. I'm just going off of what I gleaned from that time, so I will probably get a lot of this incorrect or whatever. But basically, you aren't, like, assigned a character. You get to create it yourself.
Okay.
And basically, by creating it, you choose your strengths and your abilities and your attributes and your proficiencies and what spells you can cast. And it all fishtails out from what race and what class you want to be.
Okay.
So my character ended up being a dark elf is my race, and my class is bard.
Dark bard.
I'm a dark bard. And Devin, you were a halfling.
I was a halfling, and then I was a rogue, but I was an arcane trickster.
Okay.
So I'm very happy with my character. But Valerie, I want to continue hearing about your experience with building a character, because
building a character is definitely the most involved process, and probably maybe like a slight like turn off for somebody who might be
it's a very
high buy-in,
because I mean our friends there, they helped us like walk through it, because it is a lot of, I mean, it's not like juggling numbers of great size or complexity, but it is a fair amount of number juggling, figuring out like, okay, because of this factor is affecting this, that means my performance in this is plus whatever, and then like,
so it sounds like there's like some like constraints, so like I can't just make my own character, and it's like I want to be invincible, I want to like fly for forever.
There's a magic shield that's better than all your shields, and it blocks all the bad stuff.
Yeah. There's creativity, if not like complete freedom.
Okay.
So yeah, there definitely is a certain amount of homework that has to be done before you can dive in. But I mean, once that homework was done, which I mean, it probably took like the better part of an hour, that's when you can just like, all of a sudden it goes from like, you're like, ooh, this is like a lot of structure, this is like a lot of things to juggle, then all of a sudden it's just like the Dungeon Master just goes off on whatever, and then all of a sudden you're playing and you're in it, and then you can do, from then on, you can do whatever you want within your character's boundaries.
Okay. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Was it your first time playing?
It was my first time really playing. I had once played like a very, you know, like it was a one day, like maybe 2 hours worth of like a very short. It wasn't even like actual D&D. It was some like offshoot, but similar things. I think we may have picked like standard like pre-made characters even. So for all intents and purposes, yes. And building your character was a lot of work. It took a lot of time. But I think it really did pay off, because once we did get going and get playing, I felt like I kind of was familiar with my character, because I spent so much time picking, like, okay, I got to pick these spells, and like reading all these spells, like, which ones do I want? And so I knew like what I was capable of, and then like we were kind of sort of developing our like backstories, and then that informed like motives and intentions, and because the actual playing in the game involves like you literally roll. This is literally role playing.
Role playing.
You could just play like as yourself, but you know we were kind of creating characters that were different from ourselves, and then choosing things based off of the stories we were creating. And you know, if you're at all you know involved in this, this all sounds very familiar and rote, and even for you know just RPG video games, I'm familiar with RPGs. I've been playing them for a long time. Marcus is all about Skyrim. You're getting ramped up for
I need it
for the release on PS4. I want to ask you about that in a second.
Okay.
You know, but it was a more intimate experience, I would say, because it was me. Like it was a character that I had built and I had imagined. It wasn't even just me like character creating, you know, with sliders. Like it was whatever I imagined him to be was what my character was. And then just this is probably mostly credit to our dungeon master, just the amount of creativity you are then able to have within the story, because you're not
Hellboy.
Yes.
What's a dungeon master's role other than kind of like facilitating?
Yes.
I mean, I don't totally know the extent of it either, but basically they narrate every event that happens in your story. So they're kind of like the omniscient narrator. Like they can, like maybe they're like, oh, okay, you're walking, like you come across like some ruins in the forest. And then like you can interject and be like, I want to cast a perception check and see like, which I just learned what that is. That means you can roll the dice, and depending on the number you get, if you get a high number, the dungeon master will give you more detail about it. Whereas if you roll a low number, they're still going to be really vague about it, because you can perceive the level based on the role you got.
So the dungeon master, does he just have a script and then he's just reading things?
It can vary, you know, group to group. Some DMs will literally write their entire own stories. A lot of times, and in our case, she was reading off of it was a pre-made story. But on top of narrating all of it, you know, she was in charge of, you know, tracking like a lot of like our collective stats, tracking like the we would fight monsters, and she would be in charge of knowing their stats, because every monster you fight has stats, but we can't know those because we're not in control. So she knows, you know, the attack, the dexterity, the, you know, all these things that each monster we fight. She's also controlling the monster, so in battle, when it's the monster's turn, she is making decisions for the monster.
Okay.
And what I'm learning, and she did a very good job, because I noticed her making edits, and they have power to just overwrite things.
Okay.
Even, like, dice rolls, if she wants to, for the purpose of the story, she could be like, no, actually, it's this.
Mostly to, like, move the story along, mm-hmm.
yeah.
like, keep
and,
it going.
In order to make it a better quality experience,
yeah.
which I really appreciate, and became clear to me having played it myself, because I knew that was something they could do. They're basically God in the context of the game.
Yeah.
And you can't really argue with them if they make a decision that overrules what actually has happened.
Can the dungeon master make a rock so big that even she can't move it?
I mean, a dice so big.
A dice has so many sides
that you
can't roll
it.
It turns into a sphere.
And so, you know, and they could, for instance, decide, like, I had the ability to cast minor illusions. And there's a definition of that in the book. But for me, just, you know, I could kind of suppose what it meant. So I actually took on like a goblin like intern. We captured a goblin and I was like, I'll just make him my buddy to help me out. And so I cast Minor Illusion to make him look more like humanoid so he would blend in when we were going around town. And like, I don't actually know if that is technically like allowed mm-hmm. within the confines of the game, but our DM was like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just things like that, which is like, yeah, that's fine. Like, for the purpose of the story and the group and like the group makeup, and it was a very, I don't want to say interesting, I say interesting a lot.
We'll work on our podcast.
Okay. I'll go get a thesaurus.
Yeah. You know,
sorry, I'm making noises over here.
D&D is one of those things that is just classically like, oh, that's what the super nerds do.
Yeah.
And to be fair, everyone in that room was a nerd and unabashed about it. You know, like, and that's fine. But not that I had any disrespect for them before, but like, I have a lot of respect for people who like go heavy in a D&D. Because one, it's just a lot of work. You know,
you get out of it what you put into it.
Yeah, yes. You absolutely get out. So the more work you do put into building these characters in these worlds, like, and gathering this consistent group of people to adventure with. And the more time you spend as a DM, like, building the rich lore of your story and your world and the details, like, it's a great way to build relationships. It's fantastic. It has the capability to be way more detailed and complex than any video game because it's a group thing and it's constantly evolving and changing. It's not reliant on technology. If anything, it's in spite of technology.
Well, what I've been thinking about since you've been talking, like, to me, Dungeons and Dragons just sounds like VR, but like, it's just that immersion. It's just like
you
are in this world. You are creating this world, and you're making decisions, and like they're real to you because you've invested in it. I feel like that's what VR is trying to capture.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what its ultimate goal is. I think it's. Like, I've never played it. I've never played Dungeons and Dragons. But I was talking to people that about it over the weekend, and so many people, like, I've received the opposite reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people have been like, oh, I play that. Or like, oh, like, yeah, I really want to try it. You know, I feel like it is this, like, really nerdy thing, quote, unquote, but, like, people are open to it, and I think it's kind of that idea of, like, let's use our minds, like, let's go to this mm-hmm. other place.
I mean, we can access, you know, already created content and stories with such relative ease nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, I can watch, you know, Netflix original content on, like, my shoe, but, like, like, this is something where you're responsible for creating it, so I think kind of the extra, like, brain bandwidth it takes is probably intriguing to people.
So, for you, you know, generally speaking, being outside of this specific nerddom, you are very much a nerd in your own right,
mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't call you a traditional nerd in the sense of, you know, video games and board games and that nature. What drew you? Because you brought me to this. I didn't
mm-hmm.
like you asked me if I wanted to go.
I mean, you're like a techno nerd. I'm like a an analog nerd. I like my books on paper, and I like to and I make my art with tangible materials and also digital art. But we'll disregard that for this moment.
I'm just kidding.
All and you know,
are great. They're all great.
Yeah, I'll go to the box office and buy a paper ticket and go watch the movie there. So this one, I mean, it's an analog.
It's more in your
storytelling experience. Yeah, it's probably more in my wheelhouse than
something like Skyrim.
Yeah, because rather than being like a, I guess like a captive audience for a video game where you only feel like you can go where the game has been designed to lead you. This one, I mean, you have your whole imagination at your disposal.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that I realized whilst playing is that I think an ability of quote unquote, giant quotation marks, nerds, is the ability to juggle and follow a lot of different storylines in your head. That's why, like, you know, a nerd can go in depth about, you know, the plot intricacies of Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings, or they can remember, you know, fantasy names have a reputation of being, you know, really, you know, elaborate and esoteric. So I think maybe the reason that that nerds gravitate towards this is that it's another story to kind of absorb in your head, but it's also one that you're responsible for creating.
No, that makes a whole lot of sense. So do you are our resident creative person?
Yes.
If this were a Dungeons and Dragons campaign, your character would have like plus 100 creativity points. Or maybe more. Do you feel, since this is a game that's really about using your imagination, like, what separates someone, a good player from a bad player? Is it their imagination, or is the game designed to kind of, like, you know, where maybe if you're less imaginative as a person, you would still kind of be able to do okay?
I don't know if I have quite enough experience to speak to that, but on that point, I did like something that that I read in the handbook. Our friend emailed us a 300-page PDF of the Dungeons and Dragons handbook, and I read about the first like 50 pages of it.
And this is this specific version of D&D. There are many different versions of it.
But in the intro, I'm not even sure who wrote it, but in the intro, it was said that, like, you don't need to know everything about the game to play it. You just need to have kind of like a basic grasp of it. It was like you also need two things. One of them is an imagination. It didn't say you need to be especially imaginative. You just have to be willing to, you know, delve into that. And then you need some friends to play with.
Yeah.
So it tried to be really, really, you know, accepting, and it didn't try to, like, you know, set some super high bar that it has to be at. Like, you can make it what you'd like it to be. If you want it to be really, really involved, if you want to follow the rules to a T, if you like, you know, using the numbers and stratagems, or if you just want to use it as a loose framework on which to make jokes and, you know, make silly characters and do funny voices and things like that. If you want to treat it like, you know, an improv class, or if you want to treat it more like a game theory class.
Yeah.
It can be either.
Playing it, you know, it revealed how open-ended it could be. You know, like Valerie just said, you could dive in super hard in the numbers and make it, you know, just this huge, like, spreadsheet game, and that might be super rewarding for you. My brother-in-law, he probably dreams of spreadsheets.
He tried to teach me Magic the Gathering one time, and it was like he was speaking Greek.
Yeah, like his first response to any problem I asked him was like, let's make a spreadsheet, and I kid you not. And that's just the way, like, he frames the world, and it works for him. But if you, you know, like Valerie said, you just want to use that as a vehicle to just have some silly jokes with your friends, like, it is completely capable and set up to allow for that. It just depends on the kind of group you have and what you all agree to.
Yeah.
So it really, I think that's what it comes down to. It's what you as a group agree to. Like, we're going to agree to this kind of experience and allow for this kind of experience. And this is not, I'm sorry.
Our group was pretty much on the same page in that we took it, you know, a little bit seriously, in that we didn't just throw the rule book out the window. We tried to keep that track of things, you know, to give us, you know, guidance in the game. But then, like, our dungeon master she'd let us do what we want. Like, she made it, you know, fun and interesting within a loose framework.
We'd suggest something, and she'd just, like, kind of stop, like, just take in, like, the ridiculous thing we just said, just kind of like, okay, let's make this happen. And she'd do the dice rolls necessary to, you know, make it work, and she made it work, and it was great. I was talking to you, Valerie, after this, after we got back, and we're kind of debriefing, and it's a very similar structure to how you would, you know, quote unquote, roll a character for a video game, say Skyrim, for instance, where you have some control over your skills, but there's limitations.
Yeah.
You have X amount of skill points to throw into X amount of traits, whatever. And it was kind of cool framework to view like an actual like personality through. You Marcus and you Valerie and myself, we're all different. We all have different skill sets, we all have different tendencies, we all have different strengths and weaknesses. That then kind of perpetuate like our tendencies, our the things that we are naturally good at are the things we also tend to work at on top of. So they kind of snowball. And the things that we're weak at,
it's a positive feedback loop.
The things we're weak at, we either ignore or we look for ways of covering up for. And so if I'm weak at one thing, I may look to one of you to kind of make up for that weakness in myself through your strength in it. And so that was just, it was an interesting framework of viewing, like, this game has been so long running and so, like, deeply developed that you kind of can, like, make these, like, full-fledged, like, people using a bunch of dice rolls. And on top of that, you know, every action in Dungeons and Dragons is determined through dice rolls based on your skills and chance. So whenever you do something, you roll the d20. Your d20 is like the master dice, and that just kind of determines...
It's your 20-sided die.
Yeah. Mm. And so that determines kind of how... Just, like, the base, like, how good or bad the action, like, pans out. So the higher the number, like, the more successful you are at, like, the attempt. And then your skills kind of augment on top of that. So, like... You know, first roll, you did it or you didn't do it. You did it well, you did it poorly. But then your skills in what you're doing determine, like, in what way you did good or bad.
Okay.
And again, I see a reflection of that in reality, where everything I do, there's always an element of chance. You know, I can be very skilled at juggling, and there's still a chance I'm going to drop the ball. But that chance is raised or lowered because of my talent and my proficiencies in that.
Mm-hmm.
And even in a failure, even when I do drop the ball, my proficiency will then also augment how well I fail.
Yeah, so like if you're able to course correct or if it's a complete fail,
yeah.
If you injure yourself, like based on how proficient you are, like... Even the act of failing may not be as significant.
Severe, yeah. And like, it's a good reminder for me, and I think for everyone, just to keep in mind that, you know, we spend so much time fretting about our skill. I think especially as being 20-something millennials, we're all fresh out of college, fresh-ish. And, like, you know...
Getting staler.
getting a little stale. You know, like... I'll speak for all three, because I know all three of us. Like, one of our major fears is, like, how am I doing in life? Like, how am I doing in my career? Am I doing good or bad? And it's a legitimate fear. But I think it's good to keep in mind that, like, yes, it's about our skills, but it's also, like, there's always just chance. Like, everything is chance. And so it's taking, like, the quote-unquote randomness of life and understanding that's where we start. We start with chance, but we modify it with our character. We modify it with who we are and the skills we have and the friends we have. You know, that was a huge part of playing D&D was I would set up a move, and then, you know, Valerie or one of our friends would then complete it. Because on our own, we can't do the whole action. So we need each other to then modify our circumstances. You know, I disguised Valor as a zombie to lure away a necromancer, you know. And I think it's a good analogy of, like, your real-world relationships and viewing it through game terminology. And I think it helps me understand sometimes I'm going to roll bad. But even when that happens, like, that's not... That roll is not the final say. because I have my skills on top of that, and if my skills aren't sufficient to like make up for that bad role, I have my community and my friends that can help buff that. And I think it's kind of it's a beautiful little analogy.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that that's probably a huge reason why people play this game. For that, and I'm just late to the party, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I would encourage anyone to play it, anyone at all. And if you want a good, fairly easy road in, go listen to the Adventure Zone. I guess we're just in the habit of recommending podcasts.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. This is our podcast, so we're talking about other podcasts.
Yeah. But Valor, you know, did you have any like kind of final observations, or you know, do you want to play it again?
I do want to play it again, definitely. I for one liked it because, as a creative artistic person, I find joy and pleasure in, you know, drawing, making stuff out of clay, you know, photoshopping stuff, what have you. Like, I find pleasure in creating, so that's the reason I don't play very many video games, is because I feel too passive.
You're partaking of a creation.
I feel like I'm just sitting back and absorbing it, but I'm like, I only have a time limit of how much I can do that before I'm like, cool, but I need to go make something now. And this feels like you have a much more active role in the game you're playing, so that part I liked.
So Marcus, I want you to wrap this podcast up by selling Skyrim to Valerie based on what she just said.
First of all, do you know what Skyrim is?
It's like a fantasy thing.
Skyrim is Dungeons and Dragons, but in video game form. And that's, I mean, we can just stop there.
Put it on the shelf.
Honestly, so Wind Waker is my favorite game.
Mm-hmm.
I think Skyrim is probably my number two.
Really?
And like, so much so. So, I never had a 360 or PS3 or a PC that was able to play that game.
Mm-hmm.
I would play it in my friend's dorm,
mm-hmm.
and I would go to her dorm every day, not even really to see her, but to play Skyrim.
Just leave the window open and crawl in.
Yeah, and then it got to a point, because her roommate also played, and like so the
mm-hmm.
and so the three of us just had files, and we would just like take turns, and it got to a point where we were playing so much
mm-hmm.
that she hid the game from us and was like, we all need to cool it.
She intervented you.
And so I bought the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you did.
So I could keep playing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go into her room. Well, her roommate would let me in, and her roommate and I
mm-hmm.
would play together
yeah.
when she was gone, and one day we were caught, but, like, I was so into this game, even though I never had it, you
mm-hmm.
know, and it's coming out either next month or in November.
I'll look at the date real quick.
Yeah, we should double check that, and I'm just, like, it's finally my chance
mm-hmm.
to just get into this game. It's, I think what makes it fun is that you create your character. You
mm-hmm.
that's been the first two. I mean, you don't need to spend a lot of time making
mm-hmm.
your own character, but like
mm-hmm.
I spent like 1-2 hours just
mm-hmm.
like you know, tweaking what,
finessing every
yeah,
detail.
And
yeah.
I guess it's just that idea of like, you can do whatever you want. Like, you can just, and not necessarily do whatever you want, but you can be whoever you want. You can be good, you could be evil, you
mm-hmm.
could, you can make friends, you can cross people, and you know, it's just
mm-hmm.
it's just this experience within this fantasy world that has dragons. Dragons are like my favorite thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I stopped watching Game of Thrones because
mm-hmm.
it didn't get to dragons quickly.
Yeah, well,
they come back around.
Okay,
yeah.
So
yeah, dragons come back in a big way.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if that convinced you, but I feel like it's a game that I really like, and it's full of all that goodness, all
mm-hmm.
that dungeons and dragony goodness,
mm-hmm.
but just inside of a screen.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not 100% sure on this, but, you know, I know that there are lots of video games that are literally based off the D&D model. Mm. Divinity is one of them. And I'm fairly certain, again, not for sure, that Skyrim was at least originally, you know, built from a similar D&D model. So your stat types are pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've played both, and you know, I agree. Skyrim allows you to create very open-ended characters, and the world does its best to work around you.
Yeah.
There are probably better, like, parallel games out there.
Mm-hmm.
Skyrim's a really good game.
I don't know what was so special about Skyrim. It just struck a chord with so many people, though. I feel like there's just got to be something about it that's just, like, really special.
I mean, I played Oblivion for a little bit, and, like, so I played Morrowind a little bit, and was, like, this thing is way too weird and clunky and barely a game, but super, like, incredibly deep and kind of awe-inspiring.
Jumping stats.
You know, Oblivion was also, you know, very previous games in the same series.
Okay.
Skyrim was the first one that really, in a real big way, pulled me in.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is because they a lot of quotey fingers in this episode. Quotey fingers, like, dumbed it down a little bit to make it more viable to a mainstream audience. And I don't have a problem with that. You know, because, like, having a good group that's going to pull you in where you're at, like, I think it's a good thing that games are able to pull, you know, the more average person in. And it still seems like Skyrim had the depth to back it up. You know, someone will probably critique that.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, clearly, I mean, the fact that they're re-releasing it after all this time.
And
people are pumped for it is very telling of that.
Like, it's not just me.
No, it's not just
really
you.
It's not just me.
You know, Skyrim is a special game, and I think we'll have more to talk about that when, well, we definitely will when it comes out, because it's all
it
you'll...
Again.
It, do you think, okay, final question, do you think it'll dethrone you from Overwatch?
Yeah.
without hesitation.
Blasphemy.
I mean, I don't have to choose, you know?
That's true.
Like, but I'm also trying to wean myself off of Overwatch right now. Because I've noticed that I've been playing it a lot.
And?
Well, I have a lot of things to do. I need to have more discipline.
Fine, go be an adult.
I'm not good with discipline. In most areas of my life, I'm not very disciplined. I don't know how Top Shelf Gaming has made it through, like, 2 years with my level of not being good at self-control and sitting down and, like, working. But we're here. I've been stumbling through it every day.
You got a high luck stat.
Yeah, yes.
So, Valor, any closing thoughts?
You also get to pick your name in Dungeons & Dragons.
You can do that here.
Yeah, totally.
Not in real life.
You can change your name legally.
Yeah, but it takes a lot more paperwork in real life then.
I mean, there were a lot of stacks of paperwork in that D&D
game. Maybe not. Yeah. Wait.
That had a 300-page document.
Yeah, it might only take slightly more time.
Slightly more time.
Yeah.
Question of the week.
Question of the week?
Yeah. I gotta give these interns something to do.
You gotta give them something to write about.
All these sweet, sweet baby boys. And we have two girls.
Yes.
Yeah.
There we go. How are they doing so far? Doing pretty good?
Yeah. I mean, they haven't started writing yet, so they start writing this week.
So here's where...
I have a question. I don't know if it will be good to write about or not.
Yeah.
If Dungeons & Dragons in the past has been a game that a lot of people have avoided due to stigma, what are some other games, you know, of any sort, any console, any whatever, that people avoid because of what they hear about it or stigma more than any other reason? More than they can't afford it, more than they don't have a console.
So what's, like, the current, like, stigma game?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I know. Sure. I think that's a...
That's a really good question.
That's a
great question.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have a lot to say about that. So, can you try to say what you said one more time in yes, in a more questiony, succinct...
Let's see. What is a game that many people avoid because of what they hear about it above any other factor? And maybe this is too much of a follow-up, but then, like, from what you can research or find out about it, how does that game compare in reality to the stigma that has been attached to it?
Okay.
There you go. Question of the week right there.
That
should get some pretty good responses.
That was really good. Actually, you guys are going to like this. That falls in line with one of our interns, something that she wants to write. She's talking about something that we've never really done on TSG. It's very risque.
Ruh-roh.
But she wants to write about this specific type of video game that is very sexually explicit, but her argument is that, like, these games have a lot of value in terms of, you know, story.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this falls right in line.
I think I know what her answer will be.
Yeah. So I feel like she'll definitely have something good to say. But we have a lot of good things coming here on Top Shelf Gaming, even in terms of the podcast, but also in terms of the content that we're going to be writing.
Yes, the season is beginning.
This is my favorite time of
the
year. Once we get the new interns and all of their creative minds.
Pumpkins are spiced.
Interns
are new.
Now that it's fall, the content's about to drop.
Oh my gosh, that's a good time to end.
Yeah.
So, we would actually love to hear from you guys out there with your ears hearing us in podcast land. I hear that's what this mystical land is called. If you have any questions or comments that you might like us to discuss on the show, you can send those into trustcircle@topshelfgaming.net.
Yes.
Send it in right there.
Yes, you nailed it.
I nailed it. First try.
We did an edit.
So any questions, we would love to have a question section. Subscribe. There's more coming. Rate us on iTunes. That would be great.
We would love to know how we're doing. You know, this. We are still newbies, but we're always trying to get better. Like, this show is for all of you. This is for your entertainment. So please let us know how we can create better content to make your listening experience better. And let us know what you think. Let us know what you want to see more of. Let us know what you want to see less of.
Yeah.
But, really...
You can't see less of anything right now. We're all
audio.
Let us
know you
want to
see less with your ear holes.
Yeah.
And the less you are into video games, the more we want to hear from you.
Yes.
So don't feel weird, like you're stepping out of your comfort zone, like you're stepping right into your comfort zone.
After all, I'm here.
Yeah, Valerie made it.
I'm here.
So, yeah, send anything you want. Trust Circle with a S. Circle with an S. Trust Circle at topshelfgaming.net. Share this podcast, rate this podcast, subscribe to this podcast. And until next time, have a good one. podcast@topshelfgaming.net. Did I nail it?
Trust Circle.
Darn it, I was so close.
Wow.
Yes.
All
right.
Trust Circle at topshelfgaming.net.
We have the name.
We'll do a clean edit. We'll do a clean edit. We'll do a clean edit.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.